Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Golf is back. Well, golf actually sort of kind of has been back. But yesterday was the official return of golf. The PGA Tour was back. This was not the driving relief charity match. This was not that thing where a couple of golfers and a couple of football players trade tired, canned, lame, cringy jokes with one another. This was an actual tournament, the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth. After 91 days, the PGA Tour is officially back. It's officially back, and it's being played without fans. And there is a ton of social distancing. So the tour started things off by having celebrities introduce golfers upon their return. Like you had Aaron Rodgers taking over the mic to announce the arrival of Max Homa.
Now on the first tee, please welcome a man usually seen donning a mustache that allows his friends to make fun of him endlessly, his wife to give him the cold shoulder at nighttime, and his best friend and dog, Scotty, to refuse a walk. A one-time winner on the PGA Tour, avid amateur Scrabble player, occasional podcaster, and all-time Twitter troll. From Valencia, California, Max Homa!
Love it. Love it. This is a big Max Homa house. Big Aaron Rodgers house. Then you had Reggie Bush introducing Tony Finau and then getting some other things off of his chest.
Back on the tee box. Hailing all the way from Salt Lake City, Utah. He's tall. He got the shortest backswing in PGA Tour history. Mr. Tony Finau. Welcome back, young man. But this is what I don't understand. I see Tony, and he's just barely turning. Barely turning. Like, a little bit of a turn. And smashing the ball 500 yards down the fairway. Do you know how frustrating that is to watch? I'm an athlete. All right, I work hard, okay? I work hard to stay in shape, man, to look good. And this little white golf ball is holding me back from greatness. It's holding me back.
Strive for greatness, cuz. Let it all out, Reg. Let it all out, Reg. Also a huge Tony Finau house. Then you've got celebrities and athletes providing commentary throughout, like Darius Rucker, Golden Tate. They were discussing Bryson DeChambeau's physique.
Oh, baby.
Oh, great shot.
All right. That is a good shot.
Too much spin.
Can we talk, yeah. Can we talk about this guy's physique right now? This dude looks yoked.
What happened? All of a sudden, he looks like Lou Ferrigno. I know. He is just jacked.
I mean, they're right. Can we have that conversation about DeChambeau? My man, the mad scientist. Looks like the mad middle linebacker. Hey-o! He says he put on 20 pounds during the quarantine, but that feels like an understatement. Is this guy coming back for golf or the start of NFL training camps? What was the launch angle and bar speed on his bench press? This dude looks like he spent the entire time in the swing lab and the weight room, and it's not like he was some tiny guy to begin with. But the scientist now looks like the kind of guy who beats up scientists. I mean, teeing it up at the track, this guy looks like he should be choking fools out in the octagon. And him looking like Brian Urlacher was not the only surreal thing from yesterday. Don't get me wrong. It's great to have golf back, but it's still kind of odd to be playing it the way they were playing it yesterday. Not my words, but that's Brian Harman. He shot a 5-under, and he did call the experience, quote, odd. He went on to say this, quote, you can hear people hitting tee shots around the course. I had to back off a couple of putts because somebody hit a tee shot. I was like, I don't remember being able to hear that here. That's usually a wall of people in between here and there, so you don't hear that kind of stuff. The sound travels a lot worse. It's odd to see the place with no fans. It's definitely different. End quote. Ryan Palmer, his playing partner, described it as obviously different. Justin Rose, who was 7-under on the day, and tied with Harold Varner III for the lead. Shout out to Jungle Karma. He called the day, quote, quite subdued. Quite subdued. Quite subdued is like saying Bryson looks like he may have hit the gym once or twice. It was extremely subdued. It's got to be, though. It's the right thing. It is the safe thing right now. but it still means you have surreal moments like Phil Mickelson finding the fairway off the tee to the sound of exactly one person clapping.
She's set to join us tomorrow, by the way. It'll be part of our coverage. Do a little Skype call with her. She introduced Phil to start his opening round. Well done. Mickelson threads the needle.
Man, how odd was that? How strange was that? Normally, that big cornball has a gallery of 10 people deep around him, cheering him on, whooping it up after every single thing he does, good or bad. And then on that tee shot, there was one person applauding. Now, it doesn't mean that there were no fans. According to reports, there were six young adults and some dude in a bike helmet staring through the fence on the second tee box. There were a few fans outside the fence on four and at 15.
Welcome back, Justin.
I mean, he drops that and absolutely nobody reacts. Nothing. Even more insane, Sung Kang did this.
162. Good solid rip. And it's a one for Kang. Played a lot of golf here with Danny Lee, and that is unbelievable. One bounce and rolled in. Shot of the day for sure there for Sung Kang.
That's a one. A hole in one. And you barely even know it. You ace that hole with a gallery, and this place would be losing its collective bleep. But in this case, just kind of a shrug. Keep moving. Yeah, it's a one. Write it down. Hey, old man. Hey, Ritt. Mark it down. That's a one. Mark it down. That's a one.
That's an H.
That's a one. Finally. Like the absence of fans also meant we got some great moments, like this hole out from John Rahm. And an uncensored reaction believed to be from my guy, Brooks Koepka.
Here's Rahm at the eighth just a moment ago.
Pretty good there. Oh, I saw everything.
Your ball all right? Well, we were hoping for better audio with no fans surrounding the course. We apologize if anybody was offended by what they may have heard there. Harold Varner, though.
Pretty bleeping good there. Pretty bleeping good there.
Pretty good there.
He's right. That was an awesome shot and a great moment. Normally that reaction gets drowned out by the fans because they'd be going nuts. This time it was front and center and it was fantastic. And while Jim Nance was smooth as ever in handling that moment, I really hope that nobody was offended by that reaction on the course because that was real. That was honest. That was cool because that shot was pretty bleeping good there.
Pretty good there.
That's how you make chicken salad out of chicken crap. No fans means no crowd noise, means better audio and a better experience. Bring it the bleep on. Welcome back, golf. Good to have you back. Correction, pretty bleeping good to have you back.
Pretty good there.
The only thing we were missing was the big cat. The only thing missing from a crowdless PGA Tour event was Eldrick. Because if there's any cat that I want to see on the track where sound is traveling from tee box to tee box without barriers, it is the cat. No one in the history of golf has a more famous case of the red ass and a more chronic case of the sailor mouth.
I was taking right my swing.
Oh, Tiger, God.
Lost him to the right.
Go.
Not even close.
Oh,
God. Tiger Woods. Suck.
God. No, Tiger.
Let me get you.
Dumbass.
God, Tiger.
He is totally out of sequence in his golf swing.
Dumbass.
Not happy with that one.
Oh, by Jesus. Get down! Down!
God. Six, I meant to say.
God!
Oh, no more commentary necessary.
That made my commentary look pretty mild.
Imagine the cat at Colonial without any noise to drown out all those JC blasts.
Tiger!
All those GD bombs. Dude could be way out on the corner of the track, teeing it up at number six. Snap hook went into the street and mother F so loudly. And it'll be so unobstructed that somebody lining up a punt on 18 would have to back off. Hey, listen, whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want to make sure that what you're listening to is what you're listening to, not what your roommates or neighbors or significant others are listening to. Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you go dropping hundreds of bucks on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Now, you already know Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. And they sound just as amazing as the other top audio brands that you know. Now, check this. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are the best ones to date. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, they're perfect for conference calls or binging podcasts. And unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet. There are no dangling wires or stems to distract anybody during video calls. You've heard me talk about how the company was co-founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Cardi B, J.R. Smith. They're all obsessed with Raycons. Pick up a pair and see what all the hype is all about. Now it's time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Rome. These earbuds are amazing. Find out for yourself. Go to buyraycon.com/Rome and get 15% off. Buyraycon.com/Rome. Rex Hoggard. Rex, before we get to the tournament and the return of golf, Rex, how are you doing and what have the last 3 months been like for you, Rex?
My yard has never looked better. It's almost Augusta-esque. I don't want to say that because I've taken it over the top, but I mean, I built the fire pit just in time. You have no idea how good my yard looks.
Man, I love it. I love it. Well done. All right, so what was it like for you, Rex, to be back on the course for the return of play yesterday?
Golf, real life sports to talk about is pretty surreal. If you would have asked me 2 months ago when the PGA Tour came up with this plan, the first week, second week of June, sounded very ambitious given the state of what was going on around the world, really. And the idea that we're here now and the PGA Tour has come up with all of these protocols and we found a way to make it happen. They found a way to make it happen. And there were some surreal moments on that tee yesterday morning when Ryan Palmer hit the first tee shot. And look, not having fans is weird today. It's going to get even more weirder as we get closer to Sunday afternoon and someone wins this event. However, I've been taken by, once they got between the ropes and once they started to hit shots again and had scorecards in their hand, it really felt normal. And I don't know that I felt like we were going to be here that quickly, but we are.
You know, but one player after another did talk about how different it was. Some guys said that it was odd. Others said it was strange. I happen to agree with you, Rex. I thought, especially like when UFC came back, I thought this is going to be so strange. But then you find yourself acclimating to it pretty quickly. What kind of an impact, though, do you think that the absence of fans had on how guys played yesterday and early today?
The one guy that I think stands out in my mind, and I followed him for a couple holes, was Phil Mickelson, because we know his interaction with the fans is so important. It's in his DNA. I mean, he is Captain America when it comes to the PGA Tour because he just loves that engagement. And there was two moments, and they were both surreal. And he birdies 18, and there's about four people standing around the green, and three of them clap, and one of them is his swing coach, Andrew Getzen. So it gives you an idea, oh wow, this is weird. But Phil immediately goes to the signature tip of the cap. He makes the turn, birdies the first hole. No one even claps for that one. And he still couldn't help himself. He still goes to the tip of the hat and the thumbs up, and it was signature Phil. But you can imagine, as we get further down the road, here's a guy that just feeds off this energy. And I think you could see it in the other groups in the afternoon as well. Gary Woodland brought up a great point that when you start a round in the first fairway is lined with fans, when you're playing with Tiger Woods and it's the center of the universe, you absolutely pound the ball because you're so excited. That wasn't there yesterday, and I think that's the adjustment guys will have to make.
We were talking to Rex Hoggard. I thought the most surreal thing of all, Rex, was when Brian Harman rolled in that 51-footer for par, and it was met with silence. I mean, that was so surreal. What was that like?
Ryan Palmer hitting the first shot. You don't know how to react. He didn't know how to react. You just kind of put your hand in the air, and you realize, well, that's stupid because nobody's clapping and no one's here anyway. But then your playing partners say something to you that's funny. So I think this is something that Pat Perez turned it into a very, very funny moment yesterday when he finished up his round and he was actually waving to the non-existent crowd. So I think guys are going to lean into it in the short term.
You know, I love Pat Perez. Rex Hoggard is joining us. So, Rex, Jordan Spieth is off to a hot start today. This, of course, is where he's always played well in the past. How has he looked to you so far?
I think if anybody needed a break, and look, it's been terrible. I don't want to make it sound like there's a bright spot here. But if anybody needed a break at that point in the season when we stopped playing in March, it was Jordan Spieth. I mean, he was lost. He was searching for something. He has been searching for the last couple of years. And it really gave him an opportunity to go home and honestly get away from golf, to quit thinking about it, to quit trying to find a fix, and spend a couple of weeks just trying something close to a normal life in the way we are today, and then get back to it. And I think him and the swing coach, Cam McCormick, came up with some sort of formula. And he loves his golf course. He plays here quite a bit. He lives in the Dallas area. And I think it's a perfect fit for where his game is at right now.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. Rex, so Ricky Fowler was open to the idea of wearing a mic yesterday, but Justin Thomas was very opposed to it. Given how awesome Thomas was during the match, too, I would love to hear him wearing a mic for the entire round. Do you think he will ever come off that point?
I would hope so, because, like, I wrote it after the match, and I truly believe this. When Justin's done playing in 20, 25 years, and he's finished with his Hall of Fame career, I think he is going to be brilliant in the booth as a TV announcer for whatever network is showing golf at that time. Just because of the insight, he just has that personality, and he's not afraid to give an opinion. I would hope he would come off that. And Jordan, when he was asked about it this week, I was kind of surprised. He wasn't all in on it either. I think players really wanted to see how it went this week, specifically with Ricky. And if it goes well with Ricky, I think guys will start changing their mind.
Rex, what about Bryson DeChambeau? Came back looking like an absolute tank. He says he gained 20 pounds during the pandemic. You know, there's always a method to his approach, but in your opinion, does putting on 20 pounds of muscle feel like that's going to be something that pays off in the form of wins?
No, it doesn't. And we've seen it, right? We saw it with Tiger Woods. He put on a lot of muscle, and it seemed to have a negative body and on his game. And I don't know if the two are correlated, but certainly you can make that connection. The one thing that stood out to me yesterday is Bryson put on 20 pounds of muscle, obviously. Gary Woodland, who is not a small guy, ended up losing 20 pounds. And they both shot the same score yesterday. So I don't know what lesson is there, but there's something to be said for it. And I think when it comes to Bryson, he's going to continue to be on that cutting edge. I think he wants to be the guy trying to think of a new way of doing it. He's probably getting to a point now where he's getting some eye rolls from guys, but he's happy with where he's at.
Rex, the PGA Tour conducted 486 COVID tests this week. All of them came back negative. What's your sense as to the testing protocol, and what would happen if there's a positive test?
Well, I think if you go across both tours, so the Korn Ferry Tour, which is their kind of double A, let's call it, all total, they did about 1,500 tests. And there actually were four positive tests. They were at-home tests before they traveled. They were all on the Korn Ferry Tour. And I think it was as obviously as good as the tour could have hoped for. I mean, because they didn't know how this was going to play out. And obviously there was a lot of pressure to get this right, just not internally, but they know the other sports are watching to see how this plays out. And I will give the tour credit. They have come up with a protocol and a plan. It's exhaustive. It's detailed. It's very stringent. We've seen players, caddies this week getting fussed at because they're not following some of those protocols. And there's a reason behind it, because they know if they get this wrong, we don't know when we're going to get another chance. So I will give the tour credit. And there was a lot of pressure. Now, in my opinion, when we're to this point next week in Hilton Head, and we've gone through this process again as the traveling circus gets on the road and moves to the next city, and we have similar results where no one is testing positive, wow, that's going to be great. I find that hard to believe, simply because it's got to be a question of math at this point. I mean, someone's going to catch it. There's nothing you can do about that. And there are protocols. If one person gets it, there's things they have to do, go into quarantine and so forth. The million-dollar question is, how many positive tests would it take to shut it down? We haven't heard a good answer, and I don't know that there is a good answer.
Rex Hoggard joins me for another moment or so. Rex, I had Harold Varner III on the show earlier this week. We talked about his experience and essentially the role he finds himself in on tour. What do you make of what the tour is doing in terms of increasing diversity and access?
I listened to that interview. Such a good interview, because he's so well-spoken. I come to the conclusion that Harold came to this crossroads very, very reluctantly. And I don't think he's ever felt entirely comfortable being the face of an African-American on the PGA Tour. But he realized that saying nothing at all was no longer an option, given where we are in society right now. And when you look at what he did, that social media post, the letter, which was so insightful and it's so well written. And it did prompt action on the PGA Tour. He sat down with Commissioner Jay Monahan. They had a long discussion. What they did this week with the 8:46 tee time as a moment of silence to honor George Floyd and to try to bring awareness. All of those things are a call to action. And I think very, very large part due to Harold Varner. And you have to look at him. And I know he came to this reluctantly, but you have to be very, very proud of him.
Talking to Rex Hoggart. Rex, one last thought. I appreciate your thoughts on that, too. So John Rahm said that if fans are not allowed at the Ryder Cup, there is no point in having it. Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy expressed similar sentiments. I mean, could you see a scenario where some players decide not to play in the Ryder Cup because there are no fans? How do you expect that to play out?
I think the vast majority of players have made this clear. They don't want to play a Ryder Cup without fans, and I think you would agree with them. And there was this great moment, just to give you a quick snapshot of what life is like now on the PGA Tour. We don't interview players face-to-face anymore. They're video conference calls. And as you probably found out over the last 3 months, those things aren't very reliable. And Koepka was asked in the interview the other day that exact question. Would there be some sort of boycott if you play without fans? And he said yes. And the follow-up question was, well, why is that? And he kind of danced around the issue and said, you know, there's a lot of different motivations for players. And finally, he was asked, well, is it about money? The audio cut out, but all we saw him doing was the Johnny Manziel money, you know, fingers to thing, you know.
Right.
And the audio went out. We all went nuts because we're like, what is he saying? But he's got the idea that, look, the only reason they would play it without fans is for money, and I don't think the players would be fans of that.
These are the people that you're not likely to hear from. These callers all have an invite, but I'm not expecting to see them when the red light goes on. I used to call out. I used to shout out. I'd get my hopes up. But then inevitably, they'd be dashed. However, in the unlikely event that any one of them do come around, I want to make sure that you're all schooled up. I want to make sure you know who the hell they are, because they deserve that kind of run. Because without some of these callers, there probably is no smack off. And let me throw it all the way back to the inaugural event. 1995, year one, the Great American Smack Off, as it was called. JT the Brick, who ripped this thing 25 years ago and quickly parlayed that into a tremendous career as a sports talk radio host. He was the one who won the first event.
Van Smack, what an honor to be a part of the first annual Great American Smack Off. The greatest city, the deepest tradition, and the best smack comes from New York and the bricks. When the earthquake hit, I didn't pick up the fish wrap to read about the damage. I looked to the box scores to see if the Knicks pulled out another gutty win. I have a passion to see Cal Ripken rupture a kidney this season than to see him break my beloved Lou Gehrig's record. Today is a celebration of smack. I compare my experience to when I pledged my fraternity back in college. For the first few months, I was a punk who had to wait on hold and pick and choose my spots to smack. Now I feel like the pledge master who gets to spank the new plebes on the butt while they say, thank you, JT the Brick. Can I please have another?
JT the Brick won the inaugural Great American Smack Off. And let the record reflect, I am extremely proud of that fact. Proud that he won the first one, and proud that he parlayed that into the great career that he's had. It's tremendous. That was his only smack off call ever, because he was off and running, shot out of a cannon after he won that thing. So that was historical for the jungle and for him. Then you've got the brothers Dottola, Michael and Jeffrey, DDS, and ESQ. Let me start with the two-time champ, Doc Mike.
You aren't Brad from Corona. You are Brad in Corona, Brad. What the hell went wrong? You live in the only place in the country that has its own urban dictionary definition. Your life's work has landed you in the, quote, valley of the dirt people. Your ambition and your life skills have landed you in a place so heinous that it's caused three innocent numbers to now send chills down our spine. No SoCal resident can hear the numbers 909 without instinctively turning to run. You guys single-handedly put the show Cops on the map, and were kind enough to teach America, hey, don't bathe your daughter in the same tub where you cook the math.
That was Doc Mike way back in the day. Yeah, I'm going to assume that he's not going to show up next Friday because he's not been around in 8 years. That said, you never know. And he was one of the best to ever do it back then. As for his brother Jeffrey, it has been even longer. Jeffrey has not called the smack off since 01. However, he does have a lifetime exemption on legendary status because he ripped Smackoff 2 back in 1996 when he shocked the world.
This guy had a tremendous run last year, kept the family name intact, and busted out Colossus Man. Let's go to the Esquire, Jeffrey DiTola.
I don't want to be a legend anymore. I don't need my own 800 number to call the jungle. I don't want my own radio show. I'm tired of being one of your boys like Husto and Psycho Mike. I want to stay on hold forever like everyone else. I want to be the one on the other end of the line when you say, in order of the longest wait, 153 minutes, Jeffrey E. DiTola. So here's the first call from the new me. Okay, Jim, you're huger than really big things. Next, women's basketball rules. Why? Because they're so fundamentally sound. Next, I know that bowling is a sport. Why? Two reasons. Because you have to wear special shoes and because I do it. Jim, doctors who can prescribe drugs for their brother's rule. Jim, from now on, as far as I'm concerned, I am the anti-legend. I am Jeffrey E. DiTola, Esquire, king of the clones. Wreck me!
Jeffrey, such a good dude. I saw him not long ago, actually. Here in the OC. Good dude. Jeffrey, I'm here for you if you want to do it. It's impossible to talk about the Smackoff without talking about one Terrence and Sierra Madre. If Caleb in Green Bay is this generation's best who never win one, then Terrence is the exact same thing to the Jungle's first 15 Smackoffs.
But at least he's better off than poor old Steve Garvin, who has to constantly tell kids, no, I'm not your dad. I'm Steve Garvin, okay? You want Steve Garvey. He's the one who pumps chicks like a rabbit on crystal meth, not me.
Hiya, Freddy. He's a scared, coward a-hole, and if I ever meet him on the street, I will fight him. Brett from Corona. I'm assuming that's not Brett from Corona Del Mar, but Brett from Corona Del Trailer Park. Hey, as much as I enjoy hearing you put the wood to Aya Frady, it seems to me your whole beef with him is based on the fact that he hasn't died yet. You know, I just hope when the years start creeping up on you, you will follow your own advice and hoist yourself up on a shower rod. Was it really that long ago that a fresh, mole-faced kid out of Cal State Fullerton stopped watching porn long enough to enlighten the world about the thin line of blasphemy? Well, I was screening calls for Jim Rome. Hey, weaklings, better not cross the thin line of blasphemy. I wish I was home watching porn today, but I'm wooden and laconic. It looked like Eric Gagne, M-O-L-E, that spells free, DexterManley.com, baby. Come on, everybody now. Sing along. Ah, screw it.
Terrence. A lot of you listening right now don't know Terrence. Terrence hasn't made a call to the Smackoff in a decade, but he did make that surprise cameo of a lifetime back in 2017 on Left in Laguna's winning call. Then there is the OG himself, Kerwin in Riverside. Four Smackoffs and a runner-up, a silver medal in 1999.
You know, the other day I was watching the Bricks gift wrap another game away by giving the ball to Ewing in the fourth quarter. And being the avid sports fan that I am, recognizing all aspects of the game at every given moment, the one thing I constantly kept noticing was, my God, I've parked my car in garages smaller than this guy's nostrils. I mean, if Amazon.com is still looking for a place big enough to store their books and CDs, Patrick's your man. And I still can't figure out for the life of me how this guy wasn't able to get the NBA players a better deal. I figured he would have just walked right into the meeting and worn the owners down by sucking all the oxygen out of the room. But I guess trees make a lot of oxygen, but you use a lot of oxygen, eh, Patrick?
Man, just like Terrence, I had not seen or heard from Kerwin until he showed up with Left in 2017. And man, that was such an awesome surprise. I sincerely wish Kerwin was still in the mix. If he calls next Friday, I would love to see how he shows up. Then how about this guy? Man, this guy. This guy I hung out for the longest time hoping he would come through. Jim in Fall River, somebody else who's been gone for about a decade and a half, but he will forever be remembered for this incredible takedown of one Andrew Pettit.
For the love of God, would you networks please curtail the amount of extreme close-ups on one Andrew Pettit? Andy Pettit pitches with his mouth agape, and he has the eyes of a goat, okay? I give him credit. He's a mean lefty. He's got a wicked sinker. But just because he glares at Posada like he's trying to burn a hole through Jorge's eyebrows with his mind doesn't necessarily mean he's any more focused than the other eight a-holes wearing pinstripes on the field.
You can imagine why I was looking for that guy every single year. He had a third-place finish to his name, three other Smackoff appearances to go along with it. Hey, man, wherever you are, dude, wherever you are, dude, you are welcome next Friday. How about some legendary female representation? A six-time Smackoff participant with two top fives. the lady clone pride of H-Town, Rachel in Houston.
To celebrate my sixth Smack-Off gym, I had a glass of Bombay Sapphire with a handful of raspberries. That's a breakfast of champions, clones. Clones, I know you missed me, but don't be that guy. Ah, Rachel, long time no see. What have you been up to? None of your damn business. Well, the Rockets are in the second round. The godfather of the NBA, Greg Oden, and your boys are at home. Man's game, bitch. You do know I'm Rachel in Houston, right? Memo to Manny being Manny. If I were you, dude, I would quickly recruit Vic and NoCal's special infantry unit and have them posted up 24-7 around your doctor's office. Because trust me, dude, Selena Roberts is going to take her foot out of A-Fraud's long enough to put another book on the stands with all kinds of mind-blowing allegations by the anonymous losers who don't have the sacks to repeat it in public or to your face.
All right, so you get about a half a dozen of them right there. All invited, always invited, and never calling. But if I could pull even one or two of them, that'd be amazing. But even if I can't, it is important to give them their due. They all played a role in laying the bricks that have built the Smack Off for the last quarter century. They all showed up really nicely over the last 2.5 decades. Man, they know the number. It's up to them to use it. I would love to hear from any and all of them. 7 days, 5 shows. Let's get it. My guest, of course, is Darius Leonard. Darius, it's great to have you back. Before we get into the offseason, how are you and everybody around you doing in this unprecedented time?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. Family's down in South Carolina. Just trying to stay safe and just spend some time with the family.
It's good to hear that. So what's that been like? Your wife, you, your daughter, you're in South Carolina. So how have you gone about finding a place to work out and to stay in shape?
Man, I actually turned my man cave into a gym. So I've been working out in there and running outside in the yard or going to the football field and run there.
All right, so let me ask you this, because you made the point that because you're out in the country, that means you don't have that normal access that you would have to doctors, chiropractors, acupuncturists that you'd see in the offseason. As a result, you've said that you got to find the right balance, right? You don't want to push too hard because you don't have those around you that you normally might have. So if you're used to going 100 miles an hour and going all out, how do you handle this now when you don't have some of the resources that you would normally have?
Lately I've been – you know, I train, instead of going 4 hard days, I go 2 or 3. And knowing I'm going to have to give my body more rest time just because I don't have the same people down here that I can actually have work on me. So I just got to play it smart and take care of my body a whole lot more this offseason than I would any other offseason.
Darius Leonard is joining us. Now, one of the things you've talked about is the team's motto of the 3 T's, right? Trust, team, and toughness. So when you're in a situation like this where guys have to meet online and you're not all together, how important is that trust and then trusting that the guys on your team are going to put in the same work that you're putting in?
That's big. You know, that trust, we always talk about accountability. And, you know, you got to be able to trust and hold your teammates accountable for doing the things that we need to be done so we can hit the ground running and be a Super Bowl contender.
All right, so one of the guys I know you can trust is your fellow linebacker, Anthony Walker. I know how competitive the two of you are. So how are you staying competitive in this really unusual offseason? And are you keeping an eye on his workouts and all the work he's doing?
Oh, yeah, man, AWOL, we definitely so competitors. We see who can wake up first, see who can work out the hardest. We have this belt thing that we have with the Colts, and it measures your heart rate. So we're trying to go off who worked hardest by the heart rate belt, see who's who's doing the most workout, not just in the weight room or on the field. Who's in the playbook more? Who's asking each other questions? Who's trying to pick each other's brain? Just competing and just trying to find a way to make each other better.
Dude, that's so good. I love the heart rate belt and who can wake up first. What time do you wake up in the off season?
I wake up around 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Do you need an alarm to get up at 5:30 or you just wake up?
Nah, not anymore. My body's so immune to it now. I just jump up and I'm ready to rock and roll then.
We're talking to Darius Leonard. All right, so you and I have talked about your journey in the past and the fact that it hasn't been easy, but since arriving in the NFL, your first two seasons have been among the best by a linebacker in team and league history. So knowing the work you've put in, how much pride is there for you in that accomplishment? And then what does the next level look like for you?
Oh, man, just knowing, you know, that my name is listed up there, it means a lot. But, I mean, I haven't done anything in my book. So, I mean, everybody's praising, but in my eye, I haven't done enough. I haven't won any championship. My team haven't won a championship. So, you know, I just think that there's so many plays that I left out on the field. And, you know, just now looking at the film, learning the game, and hopefully I can just, you know, make them plays and make the tackles that I missed in the last 2 years. Hopefully I won't miss or I need to make them plays.
Darius, it sounds like when you talk about watching the film and talking about the plays that you left on the field and the plays you missed, it sounds to me like what you're saying is you're not watching your great plays. You're watching maybe the plays that you didn't get it done. Instead of watching your best, you're watching your worst. Is that true?
And if that is a very true statement. You definitely got to watch your bad plays, because, you know, if you're watching your bad plays, that's going to give you that fire and desire to not to make that same mistake. Because, I mean, the people who's not watching film, you know, they looking at all their good plays, saying they're good. But me, my head down in the dirt, I just want to be the best. And if I know I got a bad play on the film, I want it off. And if it's going to take me looking at that bad play 24/7, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to try not to make that same mistake that I made one time before.
Darius Leonard joining us. All right, having said that, let me ask you about one great play. I mean, you made a number of great plays, but I want to ask you about one in particular. You did a video for the team website talking about your favorite play. It was from 2018 against the Raiders, fourth quarter in a one-score game. They call a running play for Doug Martin. You meet him in the hole. You force a fumble. What do you remember about that play, and why is that your favorite play?
I remember everything about it. I can remember, you know, lining up on the left side of the field. We call it blitz. It was ran perfectly. They ran the ball right into it. Me and Doug Martin, you know, going head to head. And me, I was just going straight for the ball. And the reason why that's my favorite all-time play, because it came in a clutch moment where the team needed to step up. The team needed to make a play, and we was playing terrible. We were playing terrible that game defensively. So coming off the sideline, Coach said that we needed somebody to make a play, and, you know, I was just glad, you know, to step up for my team and make a play for him.
Darius Leonard joining us. You know, it's kind of amazing. When I talk to you right now, you don't sound like a guy who only has a couple of years in. I mean, you sound like you've been playing in the NFL for 10 or more years. You and I have talked in the past about how you approached your role when you came in, and it was connected to some advice that Randy Moss gave you, namely keep your mouth closed and your ears and your eyes open. You're still just entering your third season, but you're a captain. So how does that role change, and how do you approach the job of being a leader?
I'm in that role doesn't change. You know, I'm still that same guy. I mean, I was always taught to lead by example. I mean, just because you got that captain on your chest, that doesn't mean you need to go change the way that you are. I mean, I'm that same guy who's been doing the same exact things since high school, you know, leading by example, running to the ball, doing all the small things. That's what people fail to realize, you know, the small things that will make you great, not the big-time plays. You know, the ball is 50 yards down the field, I'm running. That's what makes you a leader. It's the guys they can look up to say, how do you play this game? You got to play at 100 miles per hour. And, you know, with making success, my high school baseball coach, Kip Herlong, always told us, act like you've been there before, you get there again. So, I mean, yes, I celebrate. Yes, I have fun. But once I get off the field, I mean, it's always nothing but respect. And I know that there's always room for improvement. And if I keep acting like that, keeping that chip on my shoulder, I can get there once again if I act like I've been there before.
Darius, how good of a baseball player were you? Did you like baseball?
I actually love baseball. Football is actually my least favorite sport. I was a basketball, baseball, then football guy. I was okay. I was a decent baseball player. I pitched short and played center field. I definitely enjoyed it. It was fun. You know, I think I loved baseball so much because it was a challenge to me. I wasn't, you know, the best one on the field, but I wanted to be the best. And, you know, I had to put in, I mean, timeless hours in the cage or timeless hours on the pitching mound just to be able to play. And with me being a competitor, I mean, I want my name at the top of every list. So with me not being such a great baseball player my first few years, that's when I knew that, you know, baseball, I respect every baseball player because it's a game where you got to be technically sound. I mean, a simple mistake can, you know, it can in your at bat or something. So that's why I love baseball so much, because it's very technique.
Darius, I'm not sure I've ever heard a football player talk about baseball the way you just did. I think that's really interesting. You know, but no matter what it was, baseball, football, or baseball, you had this work ethic, you had this drive, you had this grind. Was that hammered into you, or were you hardwired for it? Were you always like that?
Well, I actually watched my brother go through it. I watched my brother, Anthony Waters, you know, go to Clemson and play in the NFL, and I saw how much he worked. And him and my mom always told me, you know, never take a handout. Always work for absolutely everything. If you want anything in life, you got to go out and earn it. Don't let anyone hand it to you. And ever since then, I was like, you know what? I want to go earn a job. I want to go earn this. I want to do this. I never wanted anybody to just hand me some money. I want to at least, you know, wash a car or do something to earn some money. And that's just always been my mindset, to go earn everything that I have.
Darius Leonard is joining me for a few more moments. So in terms of the team, Darius, how fired up were you when you saw the team bring in DeForest Buckner to add to that line in front of you? I mean, and what's that doing for you?
Oh, man, I was, it was having so many mixed emotions when we signed DeForest Buckner, because, I mean, he's a great guy. And for me playing linebacker, having some dogs up front, knowing that the offensive linemen are going to have to focus more on them instead of, you know, climbing up to the second level as quick. So, you know, I was happy. I'm definitely looking forward, because, I mean, with him, Justin Houston, D'Amico Autry, Grover up front, there's no way that the offensive lineman can come up quick. And, you know, it's definitely going to feel good for me, Anthony Walker, and Bobby Okereke, a linebacker, to, you know, run around and make plays. And, you know, we always talk about competing. And, you know, I love getting sacks. They love getting sacks. So it's definitely going to be a competition at all three levels, because Kenny Moore gets sacks too. So we want to see who can compete and get the most sacks, and who can compete and help this team win.
Darius Leonard, my guest. All right, so what was your reaction when the team went out and added Phillip Rivers in the offseason?
I mean, you know, I was shocked at first, and then, you know, knowing Phillip Rivers' background, especially his connection with the coach, so I definitely felt good to kind of go in and learn that, you know, what kind of competitor he is, what kind of ball player he is. And, you know, just watching him over the years, knowing that he's a dog and knowing he can sling it. So I'm definitely looking forward to him coming in and helping his team win.
He is a dog, too, in the best way. Listen, if this team stays healthy, how good can this team be? What's the upside?
I mean, upside, I honestly think we could be a Super Bowl contender. But, you know, it's never good to look good on paper. You know, you got to go out and prove it each and every week. And that's what we're going to have to do on each Sunday, Monday, and Thursday to go out and prove it. There's nobody going to hand it to it. There's a lot of teams that have a lot of talent, but, you know, don't make the playoffs, and we don't want to be one of them.
So leave me with one last thought. We've talked about the town of Lakeview, South Carolina in the past, and what a special place that is to you. So what's it mean to you now to be representing Lakeview on the biggest stage?
It means the most, man, especially coming from a small town. Not too many people make it out. Not too many guys make it to the NFL. And, you know, me making out a small town when everybody said that I wasn't, and, you know, seeing the disrespect, you know, growing up from, you know, the news stations around Lakeview being overlooked, and now Lakeview having a guy who's been playing in the Super Bowl. I mean, got a guy who won a Super Bowl, got to play in the Pro Bowl, all pro. And, you know, just letting everybody know that just because you play in a small town or a small school, that doesn't mean that you can't be great. And for me to have Lakeview on my helmet or Lakeview on my chest represented, it definitely means the most to me.
So, Darius, were you looking to prove all those people wrong, or were you looking to prove those around you right?
I definitely want to prove everyone wrong first, because if they believed in me, that's mean they already on the side with me. But if I got doubters, I'm definitely down to prove them wrong.
We are joined by Pat Chambers. Pat, great to have you back. There's a lot to talk about, but before we get into any of that, Pat, how are you and everybody around you doing right now?
Hey, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it, buddy. I hope you're safe and I hope you're doing well. My family's awesome. We're in a good space right now. We still like each other. And my wife and I are enjoying our kids. We have four kids, 11, 10, 8, and soon to be 5.
Wow.
So my immediate family's doing well, and our so far so good, our Penn State family's doing well.
Really good to hear that. Pat Chambers joining us. You know, Pat, you and I spoke on March 11th, which was a few hours before Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID-19, and then everything started to shut down. The next day, the Big Ten canceled the conference tourney. What do you remember about that challenging time?
Wow, Jim, you're taking me back. It took me, in all transparency, it took me a long time to get over that. I worked, and my staff has worked, and so many players have come through the door. We worked so hard to put ourselves in position. We were a fifth seed, and, you know, we've been through a lot of losses, a lot of down years, and we put ourselves in position to be real, real successful. And then you're about, you know, you got your best team ever. You got a great, you know, player in Lamar Stevens and Mike Watkins and Curtis Jones and just great guys on the team. And you have to go in front of them the day after that we talked, you're exactly right, and tell them the first bit of news that, hey, they just, we were at the arena. We went to the arena. We had a shoot around. The vibe was amazing. The juice was off the charts. We couldn't wait for this new season. We couldn't wait for this second season to begin, and then to be, and then to take that momentum into a meeting at the hotel and look these guys in the eye, especially Lamar Stevens, you know, 7 points away from being the all-time scorer. Not that that was on the top of his list. You know, he just wanted to win, and he was looking forward to playing on Sunday at a Big Ten championship. It was tears. It was just devastation. Right there, just for the Big Ten tournament, Jim, just for that. So I will always remember that. I will always remember when my sport administrator, Lynn Hollering, came to me in the lobby right before I usually go for a little walk. And I was about to go for a walk, and Lynn grabs me and says, they just canceled the tournament. And I was, you know, I was hurting. I was devastated. But then you got to pull it together and sit in front of your team in a team meeting room and tell them. It was challenging in our own little world, right? Coronavirus has taken over. So in our own little bubble, this was incredibly devastating.
Pat Chambers joining us. You know, Pat, it's such an honest and candid response. I can hear it in your voice. Like Lamar Stevens, he had such an enormous season. And as you talked about, he put the program on the map. And you touched on this, but how much did it really hurt you for him not to reap the rewards of all that work that he's put in since he first arrived on campus and not, at least not get the opportunity to do so?
Yeah, I'm going to take it back even a step further. For him to pick Penn State.
Right.
For him to choose and to be an outlier, to be a trailblazer, if I may. You know, he could have went the easy route. He could have chose any other school that goes to the NCAA tournament consistently and fights for championships. And now he has put us in that position to remain consistent and relevant and sustainable. It was like I looked him in the eye. We had tears. It was just an embrace. It was a hug. And you don't know what to say to him, right? We're grieving. This was our moment. This was our, you know, chance to shine. This was our Super Bowl. This was, and now that's been taken away from him. That's been taken, you know, all the years that he put in. And the fact that he came back to do this was even, it just hurt you so much, the pain that we felt, the suffering that we felt. Again, I have to preface, in our little world, it was so devastating. And to hug him and to love him and to stay in touch with him as much as I am, just to show him appreciation and you feel for him. I still don't know to this day truly what he's going through. Knowing that he was 7 points away, knowing that he wanted to play in the NCAA tournament and didn't have that opportunity, you feel for him and the other seniors.
You know, at the same time, Pat, and it's not going to be a surprise to anybody who knows him, he certainly has picked himself up, right? I'm not saying that it doesn't hurt and it won't stay with him, but it's probably no surprise to you that he has used his platform to advocate for equality and justice. What's it mean then to you to see him being a role model in that area?
Jim, I was so proud of him. Him and I talked later that afternoon. I was incredibly proud of him. It wasn't a long speech, but it was a powerful speech. And he wanted everybody to know how he felt, and he wanted to lead the charge. And I love everything about him. I love everything he stands for. I think he showed his character. We did a little I did not put out a statement, Jim. I did a video with Lamar and Kevin Freeman, my assistant, because I talked to those guys, and I talked to my players, and they felt like, Coach, we don't want you to put out a statement. We would rather you do something Facebook Live, Twitter Live, one of those avenues. And I appreciated that. But Lamar was one of those guys that said, hey, this is what we need to do. And that way we can show, you know, how we really and truly feel instead of hiding behind a statement. That's Lamar Stevens. That shows you his character. He said something pretty powerful
not only that Sunday during that awesome protest, because it was an awesome protest. It was very peaceful. Everybody was voicing their concerns about equality, about racism, about social injustice. And then on Tuesday, he says, don't love us when we just have the uniforms on. Love us when we don't. And to me, I mean, that spoke volumes.
Pat Chambers is the head basketball coach at Penn State. And I want to be very clear about that. Pat, what you did was earlier this month on Behind the Climb, you did host an online discussion with Lamar and his assistant coach as well, Kevin Freeman. This was not just a statement. You wanted to go public with this and release it. So then, as a leader of young men, how do you go about leading them during this time and playing a role in being an agent of change? What's your approach?
So, discussion. I was a part of another webinar. I don't know if you heard about this on the NABC with so many great African-American coaches, Kelvin Sampson and Ernie Kent and Ron Hunter, just so many great coaches, along with John Calipari, to have this discussion, to keep the conversation going. And the thing that we need to do is we can't remain silent. We have to keep having these conversations. Look, let me put it to you this way. I'm a parent. I have four kids. And when I heard Lamar Stevens say, hey, when I hug my mom in the morning before I go out of the house, she's fearful that might be the last time that she sees Lamar. And if that doesn't pack a punch, I hug my kids, but I don't have that fear. I don't want my guys living in fear. I don't want my players living in fear. I don't want my former players living in fear. I don't want that. The African American or black community living in fear anymore. I just can't even fathom that. I can't even wrap my arms around that. My wife and I would be devastated. So if that's a good example or a good story for all your listeners out there, think about that for a second, especially if you're a parent. That's we got to keep the conversation going. We have to keep the discussion going, and that's what we're going to do within our program.
Right. That's the best story for the listeners to hear. And I've been talking about this myself, Pat, that this is not a comfortable conversation for a lot of people, but it's time to get comfortable being uncomfortable. In addition to this, you and women's head coach Carolyn Keegar were part of an online discussion talking about Michael Jordan and The Last Dance. Overall, what was your takeaway, Pat, from them watching that series?
Wow. Just investment. The investment that Jordan put in and his teammates, you know, I felt like Pippen is one of the top 50 players in the NBA when that was done. I actually have the book in my office, the NBA at 50. And Pippen was that good. But I think for me, Jordan, and we always see him crying and we always see him so emotional, and he even got emotional during the interview process. And we always tell our guys, we always tell our ladies, like, invest. Because if you invest, you're going to put everything into it. And if you come up short, that's when the tears come. But if you don't invest and you don't put all into it, then you're okay. You're just like, oh, well, we lost. Oh, well, I didn't make first team to all Big Ten. Oh, well, we didn't win a Big Ten championship. Oh, well, we didn't go to the NCAA tournament. And there's no 100% commitment. There's no total investment. Jordan and the Bulls invested. They committed. I know Scotty, you know, who I felt like should get more notoriety because of all those championships. And Jordan even says it. Look, Jordan wouldn't be him, you know, the six championships without Scotty. But he does have a couple blips, right, a couple speed bumps on his resume that I think we all have to overlook and understand what he was going through at the time. So for me, what I take away from Jordan is total unwavering investment to be the best that he could be as an individual, but also to be the best team that they could be.
And then, Pat, one last thought about that, because you mentioned your family a couple of times, your immediate family, the Penn State family. Something else you talked about in relation to the doc is the fact that Jordan listened to his parents, but at the same time, his parents were not overbearing. They did not push him too hard. What do you make of that dynamic?
You know, it's so hard today. You know, there's a lot of backpack parents out there, or helicopter parents, or we don't want our kids to fail. We don't want our kids to stub a toe, and we just don't want to see them hurting. And you know what? It's therapeutic. I think they have to go through challenge. I think they have to go through adversity. And if they do, they'll be better human beings for it. And they'll have that mechanism, that coping mechanism, or a solution-driven
approach to things instead of, being down or my parents are going to fix this. Jordan listened to his parents, and if he didn't listen to his parents, he would have went with Adidas. I mean, think about that for a right. second. Could you even fathom, Jim, Jordan being an
it's
Adidas
amazing.
Brand?
Right, right. No, I can't.
No, I can't either. And I'm not sure if Jordan would have been a billionaire either. So his parents, and give him credit for listening, because sometimes today, especially with the internet, especially with social media, we all think we know everything, and we don't need that wisdom, and we don't need that experience. And I would say Jordan made the right decision there.
When are you going to play Alvy's Week That Was? Signed, Jeff in San Antonio. Good question, Jeff. Right now, Alvy, roll it. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope your week's off to a good start. Lots of good content for you today. Let me start with UFC 250. That was another great night for Dana White and his company. The day before his fight with Eddie Wineland, O'Malley tweeted, "I'm feeling something flashy." Check out how this sounded.
Yeah!
He does a fin.
If you don't know now, I mean, holy crap. And that was not the only insane knockout of the night. I mean, that was badass. I thought my guy Daniel Cormier's head was going to explode cage side. Woo! Kevin Ioli joining us. What did you make of that one punch, Kevin?
When O'Malley showed it with that knockout. Perfectly placed, right hand, right on the chin. Good night, Irene.
We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong.
Because
for not
if any of this is going to mean anything at all, it has to be about more than words. It has to be about actions. So don't just talk about it. Be about it. Therese Paylor.
Many people who don't give legitimacy to the causes of police brutality use the flag. By bringing it up and like hammering that point home, it's a way to distract from the message they're trying to hit home.
Amanda!
She is a superstar. She has it, and she's got a ton of it, and she has crazy punching power.
Oh! Nice right the mouthpiece out!
She got rocked, and she pointed at her own mouthpiece.
Yeah, she knew if the mouthpiece was on the ground, there was going to be a real good chance she was going to lose teeth.
I can release a mahogany slider.
You're a middle-aged man making poop jokes, just wasting all of our time.
Now, the Air Force has had me busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest.
They did run me down to a Kings game, had me stand in between the pipes so these losers could fire slappers at me. And Iafredi was the one who was talking more junk than anybody. I'm like, who are you, Al Iafredi, with your 140-mile-an-hour slap shot, man? Stop. If it sounded like I was pissed that they made me do it, it's because I was.
We're a team that was coming off a successful season.
This didn't just happen since that last game. These are issues that go back years. You're the head coach. The buck stops with you. It is your culture in your program. We're talking to Howard Bryant. Sports and politics should be separate.
It's always struck me as a way of telling black people to be quiet. Politics to them is talking about something that black people want to hear, and most of the white fan base wants you to be quiet about it. So I always felt it was a silencing.
Talking to Kenyon Drake.
Well, you just stiff arm with the arm you broke less than a month ago. I'm like, oh, well, I'm just out there playing football and, good to go.
Hey, Stu, retirement denied. You do not get to go out on your own terms. You don't tell me when you're done, Stu. I tell you when you're done. Stu is retired. That's funny.
Sorry, Jim. I had to give Drizzle some money so he could try and have enough minutes on his phone to get into smack off.
Like I said, I'm not going to give you false hope.
But really, Matt, put the phone down, pick the mop up.
Just keep my name out your mouth, fella.
Susan.
Can I tell you my best smack off? That never won was Terrence.
Is that your guy, Terrence?
Sierra Madre. And I want to ask you a question, Jim.
Yes, Susan.
How do you pay LT for the for your LT?
Okay. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Where is Fight Island?
Yaz Island.
Major League Baseball can't even get a schedule together, and UFC is off securing islands, building infrastructure, and developing fashion lines. Scoreboard, Rob Manfred. Go ahead and look up at it.
Email.
That's how we get down to the 909 on the Kitchen Island. What's that noise, Daddy? What's that noise?
Nothing. That's just me and your mother wrestling.
And things to talk about. Ariel, well done. Thanks for breaking that down for us.
Anytime, Jim. And by the way, one of the greatest moments in your show's history was when you pressed them on the comments about Lance Armstrong and he said it sounded like a Mexican guy. That was a phenomenal, historic moment. I urge anyone out there to look it up. I love that moment.
Jim, Jeff from Richmond's coming to the smack-off.
The only question I want to ask the morally bankrupt clones is this, Jim. Who wants to walk with Jeff?
Who wants to walk with Jeff in Richmond? Buddy, you really should not brag about something you can't do. I mean, be honest. How long ago did the Type 2 beat us take those feet?
I'm here today to announce the opposite. I am never,
and I mean ever,
retiring. Ever. Sorry, guys in the field. Screw all of you equally and super hard.
I was shaking like a dog pooping a peach seed, and it wasn't fun.
What the hell? Give it back. Give it golden ticket.
97.3 The Fan.
I remember that drop.
Nice,
terrible,
man.
Nice radio. I remember that one.
We can do that.
Yakety yak, don't talk back. Come on, Daniel, find your sack.
I'm Steve Garvin, okay? You want Steve Garvey.
Burn a hole through Jorge's eyebrows with his mind.
The godfather of the NBA, Greg O.
I mean, if Amazon.com is still looking for a place big enough to store their books and CDs.
Rag me.
It's Brad in the headlight. I'll see you on Friday, but you won't see me. You're in my world now, Grandpa.
Charcuterie king of HB. Bruh.
We're going to take care of everything we need to take care of.
My mom actually listens to you too, Jim.
I'm going to give you a good show every single day.
Just kind of...
Oh, my bad. A show with some range.
See you boys next Friday.
A very good night now.
Good night now!
How long ago did the Type 2 beaties take the feet? Mark in Boston. We'll see him next Friday. Good job, Alvin. Well done.